and it's 8:06 here on the KPCW Local News Hour. Good morning. I'm Connor Thomas. It's a clear and cold morning in the Wasatch Back. With more information about just how cold and what we can expect ahead, on the phone we have ABC4 meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Connor. Yeah, good morning, Wasatch Back. We've got more of that wash, rinse, and repeat weather pattern shaping up for your Thursday. So similar to what we saw yesterday, mid-40s for highs for Park City. Looking at 47 or so for Heber, not quite as big of a spread due to some of the valley haze and inversion for Heber City area. We are looking at more sunshine tomorrow. In fact, not much change to the weather pattern until Sunday. We'll see mid-40s for highs, overnight lows in the upper 20s for Park City, teens for Heber, with temperatures in those mid to upper 40s through Saturday as well. We still have a front that's going to move through, a storm system pushing in on Sunday. It will bring a drop in temperatures. It will also bring a little bit of light precipitation. Unfortunately, it's not packing much of a punch. We should see a high of 37 on Sunday for Park City, with a chance of some snow showers, lingering snowflakes into Monday. All in all, we're looking at maybe a half of an inch is all, unfortunately, of snow along the Wasatch Back, with only a couple of inches of snow at the higher elevations in our mountains as we're getting closer. Storm system's kind of fizzling out, but it is strong enough. It should help sweep out some of the inversion, but bring down some cold air with it. So we drop to 19 overnight into Monday in Park City, with 28 for the high with some of those snow flurries. Plan on clearing skies Tuesday, Wednesday. Temperatures rebounding some. Should be about 30 degrees on Tuesday and 37 on Wednesday. Wednesday, with overnight lows in the teens. For Heber City, looking at partly cloudy skies, that chance of some snow showers on Sunday, 44 for the high, dropping to just 34 for the high on Monday, with a chance of lingering snow. Overnight lows in the teens will be 9 degrees, very cold as you get into Tuesday morning, 35 for the high in the afternoon with sunshine, and then 42 on Wednesday.
All right, ABC's Nate Larson, thank you.
Thank you.
And taking a look at the backcountry from the Utah Avalanche Center, on the phone, I believe you've got Nikki.
Morning. So in the backcountry, riding conditions remain thin across the board, especially areas outside the central Wasatch. That being said, soft turns can still be found on aspects untouched by the sun or the wind, as last week's storm continues to facet and weaken. So that makes for some enjoyable turns for now, but could become a bigger issue down the road. We've got one main concern right now, and that's just that persistent weak layer. Most of the snowpack is completely faceted out at this point. The concern extends beyond just today. So once we move out of this high pressure period and begin to see more snow or wind loading, those faceted layers are likely to become active again. But for now, we should just enjoy the soft turns and the sunshine and pay attention to where the faceting snow exists and where the snow surface feels damp. Today, we've got a low danger across the board.
All right, sounds good. Utah Abbey's Nikki Champion, thanks so much. Well, coming up later on the program, we'll be speaking with Summit County Council member Chris Robinson. He'll recap yesterday's County Council meeting. Then North Summit School District Superintendent and football coach Jerry Holmes has an update on issues facing North Summit School District. Finally, Park City Singers musical director Joe Deemers has details on this year's holiday concerts coming up in the next few days. And then tune in to Cool Science Radio. It's at 9 a.m. today after local news hour. Katie Mullally and Lynn Ware Peak shine a spotlight on the remarkable Marie Curie with writer Dava Sobel, who joins to discuss her new book, The Elements of Marie Curie, How the Glow of Radium Lit a Path for Women in Science. Then award-winning journalist Vince Beiser joins the show to discuss the race for critical metals in this electro-digital age. That's coming up on Cool Science Radio after the local news hour, and we'll get into a little bit of local news next. Wasatch High School's head football coach is on administrative leave amid allegations of abusive behavior toward players. As KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, families from the Jordan School District say his coaching behavior there before he moved to Heber was similar.
Several families in the Wasatch County School District allege that head football coach Judy Morgan verbally and emotionally abused their sons. They say Morgan created a culture of fear and intimidation that left some students struggling with self-harm and suicidal thoughts. KPCW confirmed a third party is investigating Morgan's coaching at Wasatch, and Morgan told KPCW November 21st he had been placed on administrative leave. KPCW's November 22nd report documenting the alleged abuse also prompted an outpouring of responses from current and former athletes and parents. Two people associated with the Wasatch football program, a parent and a current player, wrote to KPCW complimenting Morgan's coaching. The parent said his son found the coach uplifting and motivating. And the player said, "We all love Coach Morgan and we know he loved us." But far more reached out to share their own allegations of abuse, including families from Riverton and Harriman High Schools, where Morgan coached for 6 years before coming to Wasatch County. Documents from Jordan School District, which includes both Riverton and Harriman, corroborate families' allegations that Morgan's behavior was a concern before he coached at Wasatch. At Riverton, administrators investigated what they called persistent patterns of policy infractions in the football program, including allegations of discriminatory comments and hazing. And at Harriman, the principal reprimanded Morgan for inappropriate and unacceptable behavior, including one instance of failing to teach or supervise his students. One former Riverton player, who asked to be identified only by his middle initial, J, out of privacy and safety concerns, said when he read about Wasatch High School families' allegations, he recognized his own experience. J said Morgan's alleged abuse haunted him after graduation, like a time he tried to watch his younger brother's game. He said he was flooded with memories and couldn't get out of the car. And J said he still has nightmares about Morgan years later. Another Riverton graduate, Cooper Woolley, remembered an incident from his senior year during a low-stakes preseason scrimmage.
I made a mistake in that game, and he completely blew his lid, stood me in the middle of the field, and just berated me in front of hundreds of people and parents.
He said Morgan could also lose his temper in the locker room after games.
He would throw chairs on the regular. He'd throw garbage cans and, you know, kind of everything on the regular. It was never an uncommon sight to see him throwing something in moments of anger.
His younger brother, Sam Woolley, said he remembered Morgan's infant daughter crying while Morgan screamed at the team. The brother's father, Matt Woolley, said they and numerous other Riverton families asked high school administrators, the athletic director, and district leaders to intervene. But the Woolleys said they never got a response. Matt Woolley was a volunteer coach under Morgan. He said he's speaking out now to support families at Wasatch High School who may be afraid to come forward.
I would like them to use all of their power to remove Jody Morgan permanently from ever being able to coach, teach, be part of any leadership that involves kids. He has no business.
Cooper Woolley went on to play football in college. He said that experience helped him understand Morgan's coaching style wasn't the norm.
I played for some very, very kind men and great coaches, guys that really changed my life when I got to college. And it kind of opened my eyes that it's like how unprecedented it was to act the way he did, because there's just so many better ways to do and say what you want without being verbally abusive.
On December 2nd, Wasatch County School District spokesperson Kirsta Albert again declined to comment about the status of the third-party investigation. She also declined to comment on Morgan's employment status with the district. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday afternoon, and here with a recap. On the phone with me is Councilmember Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you, Connor?
Good. Hope you're well as well. Well, the meeting began with a closed session when you came out of that discussing some budget items, including code enforcement. One of the things that I keyed in on during this discussion was just how much more complicated some future ordinances are going to make the workload in that part of the planning department. Could you introduce listeners, if they're unfamiliar, to the lighting ordinance? This is a big deadline coming up at the end of the year that they have to come into compliance with.
Yeah, I think that's just one example of the, you know, we have basically a reactive system, so it's complaint driven, and lighting is something that you know, when we're trying to protect a night sky or a dark sky, or trying to avoid light pollution, you know, light trespassing, so to speak, on other people's properties and things, it that will require more vigilance. It's still probably going to be, we're going to be reactive because, you know, we'll never have enough code enforcement personnel to be going around the county and looking for it.
Yeah, and Summit County Planning Director Peter Barnes saying I think he has some ethical concerns with turning this department into just sort of a revenue stream going around trying to find people out of compliance instead of waiting for those complaints. You know, when it comes to just staffing, do they have enough staff to even go that route? And what are you contemplating in the 2025 budget as far as more code enforcement officers?
Well, they've asked for some more, and I think I can't remember exactly in their department alone, but overall we have a total of 16 new positions. Many, if not most, are in public safety, but there is some in that area, and I can't recall the exact number, but I think I think that we are acceding to their request.
Yeah, and county staff also updated you on child care programs that you funded in last year's budget process. There's a scholarship program for the public and some employee benefits for county employees specifically, mirroring Park City's program with the scholarship there. From the outside looking in, sometimes it looks like the need is far greater in Summit County, but Park City is where the lion's share of the funding is. Unincorporated county residents won't qualify for that. You know, what's your thought on that issue? Was the entire scholarship program used by the Summit County side of that this year?
I recall seeing a pie chart that we were shown yesterday that showed that of the some $280,000 total that we allocated in 2024, there was some $90,000 that was used by county employees, and the balance was used by a wide group of areas, including Park City, including Eastern Summit County, including some in Heber, including some in Salt Lake City, small percentages. Because that's where some of the demand was as it relates to our workforce here. But I don't see a big distinction between Park City and Summit County as a whole. I may not be understanding your question, but I thought it was used pretty well across the board, with most of it being used in our county, including in Park City.
Yeah, I guess I believe the allocation was around a $1 million allocation one time in from the Park City Council for their side, and somewhere around 20% of that was used. Really, most of it is still left over. It seems like there's a lot more demand for what the county is. You have less left over, I think is what I'm trying to say. And I did notice that the employee side, a little bit less was used in some of the flexible spending account benefits that you offered your employees last year. So there's a decrease in this coming budget. Will there be an accompanying increase for the type of money that's available to the rest of the public?
Yeah, so we budgeted, what's in the proposed budget, I shouldn't use past tense yet, is $60,000 for the county employees, and a total of $360,000 for the program, which means $280,000 for the broader scholarship program. And so, yes, yeah, there is an increase. It's about an $80,000 increase, but going from some 96 down to 60 for the county employees only, and that balance plus the increase being picked up on the other side.
All right. And you began your public hearing just for your county budget in particular last week. Do you anticipate taking a vote on the budget next week, or how many more meetings do you have to discuss the 2025 budget?
We generally like to have a public hearing on both sides of the county. So we had yesterday the one in the basin. I mean, we've had lots of meetings leading up to this, but in the final rounds, yesterday we had a public hearing. We continued that to next Wednesday, the 11th, in Colville. And I anticipate that we will, at the conclusion of that public hearing, we will approve the budget.
Yeah, and you had, I think, five or six other public hearings for various special service districts around the county, Mountain Regional Water, Basin Rec, North Summit Rec, things like this. I think you approved all their budgets. Were there any changes you requested from some of these service district budgets for next year?
No, we'd been over these budgets before. You know, we're asked to approve a preliminary budget, and then that was like a few weeks ago, and then they come back with their final budget, and to the extent it's a district that may straddle the east and the west, we've left it open. But in the cases of like Mountain Regional or Snyderville Basin Special Service District or Park City Fire or North Summit Fire or North Summit Rec, they were one and done last night. We approved their final budgets, but things that would transcend the county line, I mean, not the county line, but both sides of the county, we wanted to go to this two-hearing process. But we didn't make any changes. We've seen these budgets before and in earlier meetings and leading up to last night.
Yeah, and some of these fire, recreation, and water districts had previously asked you, I think also a few weeks ago, to have the power to amend and adopt their own budgets independent of a council vote. Why didn't you elect to let them do that, at least this year?
I think we like having a reason to meet with them and to see their budgets and to have them report on what they're doing. They made the argument that we have an administrative control board, each of them does, and that it's repetitive. And we concluded as long as we're the governing board, we'd like to see and approve their budget. They said we could have, you know, they could notify us of what was going on, or we could, you know, attend their meetings. Well, we're not likely to attend their meetings. I know it's a little bit of an inconvenience for them, especially when we're running late. And, you know, we haven't kept to our schedule very well on the agenda, and they're sitting there. But hopefully it's not too big of an inconvenience, and gives the public, too, that follows our meetings and that doesn't attend it doesn't attend their administrative control board meetings to see what's going on. And so I thought it was good. The one thing that was interesting is there were quite a few people that showed up thinking that we were going through truth in taxation on our general fund, which we had forecasted that we might do if we didn't get the emergency services sales tax. And so there were some that we had quite an interesting and good dialogue with some people that, in the end, we're gratified that we weren't going through truth in taxation, but had other concerns to share with us about taxation.
Yeah, because budgets. Yeah, as you said, the sales tax voters approved is expected to cover the rest of the 2025 budget if you adopt it as is. It's probably always good to remind, especially if listeners are just kind of not familiar with the Utah property tax process. There's this, you know, you say you're not raising taxes, but frequently taxpayers see a change in their bill. Sometimes that bill might go down in rare instances in Summit County, but usually with property values going up, that tax bill goes up even though you, the council, may not have voted to raise taxes. Can you kind of unpack a little bit of that? I mean, we don't have that much time to go into all of it. But when you say you're not raising taxes, what do you mean? Because some of those bills will be larger for certain residents.
Yeah, I mean, the residents look at the bottom line, right? And if it's costing them more this year than last year, they had a tax increase. The general system is that you have a certified rate and you have a property tax roll. And that relationship, forget new growth, forget anything else. If it were just static, so if the value goes up, and that tax roll times the certified rate equals X dollars. The county would get X dollars every year, and only what would change is if the value went up, the rate would go down. If the value went down, the rate would go up. That's very simplified. We'd get the same amount of money. Now, what changes that? One, if we get new growth, okay, so new growth adds to the amount we collect. Two, if we go through truth in taxation, or we put through a general obligation bond for open space or something, then we would be raising the rate. We would be breaking that cycle of that coupling of the tax rate and the assessed value, one going up, the other going down. So that, and then you multiply the complexity by, let's say, 10 taxing entities, where we have three of them, municipal, general, and assessing and collecting funds. So we have three line items, but there's another seven or eight. The biggest one is a school district. and then the water district, and then there's mosquito abatement, and there's basin rec. And each of those is going through a process. So we the county only get about 13%, we were told last night, of the total tax collected. So Summit County Treasurer is acting as the collection agent for all these other taxing entities. Monies come in and they're remitted back to the taxing entities, like the school district. And so we're not in a position, we don't control all of those. And each of those, they think, have a good case for what they're doing, whether they're going through Truth in Taxation and managing their own budgets. And so it's, we kind of are where the rubber hits the road, where the taxpayer comes and says, hey, you guys raised my taxes. Well, you know, we may have, if we went through Truth in Taxation, we may have raised the rate, or if we put a ballot initiative on for a geo bond or something. But in general, we haven't raised the rate. What the other things going on through these other entities, and as I've explained, so it's pretty complicated to go and complain to the legislature, like, or to complain that, you know, it seems like we're passing the buck, but it's a system that the state has created, and we're living within it.
And if folks Google KPCW and taxes, hopefully we've got some reports out there that demystify it a little bit. I do want to mention the Dakota Pacific real estate discussion before we go here. You made some additional asks of the developer yesterday afternoon. It sounds like the asks are getting pretty technical and granular. Can you kind of summarize what your priorities are at this point? Are you prioritizing density, discussing ratios of affordable versus market rate housing? Water shares were brought up last night. Sort of what are you, before a vote is taken, potentially before the end of the year, hoping to get?
Well, I think, our big concern is transportation and traffic. That's everybody's concern, right? So coupling this proposal with what UDOT will do to 224 in the short and long run is really important. And that, so one of the important priorities is the phasing of the development and tying it to UDOT approvals, including an early approval of some work that UDOT has had planned and could do quickly, which is a $3 or $4 million project to put some turn lanes at Ute Boulevard right now, some additional left-hand turn lanes. You know, it's easy, it doesn't require, it's not the huge project, not tens of millions. The other priority is that we want a lot of affordable housing, including attainable housing, which is between 100 and 120% of AMI, area median income. And so the densities are in flux. There's and wanting to get as much, having as much of having as little market as possible and as much affordable as possible is another priority. A third priority is getting, we have worked hard over this past year to create a public-private partnership, and the mechanics of that, who pays for what occurs, the timeline for it, and how that public-private partnership fits into the phasing. Those are probably the three big issues.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something else going on with 224 separate from that wider UDOT fix that they're working on, some extra turn lanes at Ute Boulevard. What's going on there, and is that something new we could see in Kimball before the entire junction might get overhauled?
Yeah, you've heard us talk about the STIP, the State Transportation Improvement Plan. There is a funded project on the STIP now for Kimball Junction to do that. It's been there for a couple of years or more. It's been held in abeyance because UDOT didn't want to do it if we were going to push hard, or the preferred alternative was, say, to go with alternative B, which would have lowered 224 and put it underground almost. Then that would have, those monies would have been thrown away because Ute Boulevard would have been grade separated and turn lane. There wouldn't be a connection anymore. So they have put it on the back burner. We want it back on the front burner as we're in the home stretch of their selecting an alternative. and that either A or C alternatives would in this interim project, short-term project, but a good effect, would be agnostic to A or C. It's part of them already. It would just be advancing those, and so they would have a big benefit, and they could be done in the next year or two.
Yeah, and I want to ask one more thing before we go. We've, gotten multiple emails from one resident of Summit County, and I'm not sure how many other residents share his opinion, but he remembers that you recused yourself from the Dakota Pacific project approval back in 2021. It's been before you for years now. Why did you do so back then, and do you plan to do so again this year?
Yeah, so I did so because at the time, and this has been well reported, that there was one of the executives at Dakota Pacific, who's been a friend of mine since we worked together on the Olympics, out of the blue had offered me some jazz tickets back in 2020 or something. I was out of town, and it was like the night before the game, kind of one of those afterthought things. And so I said, well, let me see if my kids want to go. So anyway, as I got, this was before we were processing this, as I got down, as it came before us, I thought, man, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have taken those tickets. So I gave this person back the money for him, and I disclosed it. And then and I recused myself and said, well, I'm just going to stay out of this from here on out. Then the council, the county attorney said that my friendship with, and I have lots of friends, but friendship is not a requirement of recusal. You have to have a pecuniary interest and so forth. And I don't have any of that. But I recused myself then and I was out of it for several months, I think, or quite a while. And then the council said, hey, Chris, we want you back in this discussion. We need your help. And so I came back in, and I've been involved ever since. And I don't intend to recuse myself here at the 11th hour.
Yeah. Do you stand to benefit financially if you approve or if you deny Dakota Pacific's proposal?
No, I have no financial or other interest in the project, and my sole objective is to find the best solution for Summit County.
All right. We've been speaking with Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson. Is there anything else you wanted to mention today?
No, thanks for your time. We've gone a goodly time, and it's been good.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you. Bye.
Getting into a little bit of local news, a third district court judge will allow a portion of a lawsuit against the chair of the Park City Planning Commission to proceed, but as KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports, some of its claims were dismissed.
Several neighbors have sued Park City Planning Commission Chair Sarah Hall over alleged land use violations during a home renovation on her Park Meadows property. The neighbors claim that Hall and her husband Jerry skirted longstanding property restrictions on their lot near McLeod Creek when they renovated in 2022. In a ruling Tuesday, 3rd District Court Judge Kent Holmberg said the case can proceed, but only in relation to allegations that the Hall should have completed a sensitive lands analysis before the renovations. Holmberg dismissed other claims alleging different violations. A sensitive lands analysis identifies a property's sensitive environmental and aesthetic elements to determine if certain kinds of development are allowed. Bob Theobald, the neighbor leading the legal fight, said he plans to continue to challenge the Hall's renovation and hopes the case will reach the discovery process. In October, 3rd District Court Judge Richard Morozek dismissed a separate but similar lawsuit brought by Theobald. Theobald is appealing the ruling and said he believes that impacted Holmberg's order. The Halls did not respond to a request for comment in time for this report. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And the Wasatch Trails Foundation is asking Heber Valley governments to help pay for more consistent trail maintenance, KPCW's Grace Dorfler explains.
There are over 350 miles of trails in Wasatch County, including around 70 miles of backcountry trails within the Heber City limits. But maintaining trails is expensive. Each mile costs $1,000 to $5,000 to maintain, and it requires a lot of labor. Wasatch Trails Foundation Executive Director Mia Yu is asking local governments to help pay for better trail maintenance in the Heber Valley. At the Heber City Council meeting Tuesday, she said it'll keep trails safer and more enjoyable for everyone. In 2024, the Mountain Trails Foundation lent its neighbors a hand with what Yu says was a much-needed trail crew. She says the Park City-based organization wanted to give Wasatch County Trails some attention ahead of new connectors linking the two counties' backcountry networks.
They saw the backlog of maintenance that we had down here in the Heber Valley. They felt that it was imperative that they supported us in our efforts to make sure that our trails were safe and accessible to the public.
But that trail crew wasn't meant to be a long-term solution. Yu says that's why she's looking for support from local governments. It would mean continuity and consistency for Wasatch County's trail network.
Whether it comes from a line item in the general budget or from TAP tax funding, we're looking for sort of a two-year pilot program where we would receive $65,100 for this upcoming summer of 2025, and then another $65,100 for the following season. And this would be sort of our attempt at really ensuring that our community has safe, accessible trails that they can use actually year-round.
In addition to the $65,000 from Heber, Yu is asking for around $46,000 from Wasatch County and $20,000 from Midway. The dollar amounts are based on the share of the Trails, Arts, and Parks tax that goes to each entity. Combined, the money would pay for three full-time trail maintenance staffers who would work between April and November. The foundation also plans to apply for more state money. The backing of local governments would improve the odds of securing matching grants that would help local investments go further. Some city council members said Tuesday they think it's a smart plan. Here's Mike Johnston.
I think it's a win-win. We can leverage funds, go get more grants, say, hey, we're putting money into this, and so find other funds.
The council discussed how the proposal could work with developments that are required to build and maintain trails, like Red Ledges and Jordan L Ridge. One possible solution would involve the Wasatch Trails Foundation talking about maintenance requirements and establishing a plan with those neighborhoods. The Heber City Council plans to revisit Yu's proposal in January before making a decision. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Here with me in the studio now, we have Joe Demers. He's the musical director of the Park City Singers. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you've got a few holiday concerts coming up.
We do.
When and where are these concerts?
Well, we are at the Community Church on December 13th and 14th. That's the church that's off of 224 behind the Park City Nursery, and we've been there for years, and we really appreciate their support and everything they've done for us to allow us to be having our concerts there and use the facilities there for rehearsals. Our concerts are going to be on Friday the 13th, and that's not an unlucky day for those that come to hear a great holiday performance, and then again on Saturday the 14th and at 7 o'clock both nights.
About how long do the shows run, and are they free?
They are $20 for adults and $5 for children, 12 and under. And they are not free. We have been doing this for many years. This is like our 26th year, 27th year, somewhere around there. And we always enjoy providing holiday music for the community. And the performances are about an hour and a half or so with an intermission in between.
Gotcha. Do you only perform Christmas songs or do you mix in some other holiday tunes? What's kind of the mix?
We try and have a varied selection of music that are both familiar and maybe some new ones that are not so familiar. Not always Christmas or holiday related. We do have a Hanukkah song in there this year, and it's called Biddy Bum. And otherwise, we have a lot of classics like Oh Holy Night, While Shepherds Watch Their Flocks, Lohauer Rose. And then we've got a few that the kids like. We've got Santa's On His Way. We have a sing-along in there. And our new pieces this year that are not necessarily holiday related. We have one that's called Benedictus by Carl Jenkins, which is an amazing piece that is very contrapuntal in some respects, meaning there are many different layers to the each voice. And then we have one that is just called Amen, and that's our final piece.
All right. I was going to ask about the sing-along, see if people should be prepared to do that. There might be people who have never heard of the Park City Singers listening in right now. Could you kind of introduce yourself and the group and sure. talk about the history there?
Sure. I have been the music director since, I believe, 2016. My day job is instructional coach over at Parley's Park in the school district. And this is like my sidekick. I've always enjoyed music. I have a degree in music and piano and voice in choral conducting. And this is just an awesome way to be able to help give back to community and help lead great singers. We have about 50 in the group. And everybody's very committed. We come together every Tuesday since September and rehearse from 7 to 9. And we have a lot of people that have returned year after year and enjoy it. And then we had some new ones that joined us this year, and they are just having an amazing time.
50 feels like a lot. Is that one of the larger singing groups in the Wasatch Back?
I think it is. And it's all community-based. So when people say, I can't sing, I don't know what to, I can't carry a tune, I kind of ditch that and say, yeah, you can. We can help you. And if you struggle, we can put you between two strong singers. So that helps.
What kind of preparation are these 50-some-odd singers putting in over the course of the year? This isn't your only concert over the course of the year, I imagine.
It is. We really do it only seasonally. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just, they come. There was no audition. And anybody who wants to sing, it's in the community, then they're welcome.
Cool. If people want to get involved, how do they find you?
Well, next September we'll be starting again, and we usually come on KPCW, and we have a couple of articles in the Park Record, actually one coming out this Saturday, so look for that, and that'll give some information too with regards to our concerts. And most people are just wanting to participate, and anybody who shows up from all walks of life, you know, we've got airline people and doctors and everything.
It does sound like nice camaraderie around the holiday
it
times.
Is.
What's your favorite part when you put on this concert?
I think my favorite part is the moment where I feel like things are clicking and yes, we're going to be ready. And that happened like right before Thanksgiving. So I'm like, oh yes, this is awesome.
Just
this
in time. All right. Well, more information, of course, at parkcitysingers.org.
Correct.
Those concerts, December 13th and 14th, Friday and Saturday, both at 7. Park
Correct.
City Community Church over there in Sun Peak. Is there anything else you wanted to mention today?
I just want to thank the board for always supporting the music program and allowing, you know, we also get the rap tax, and that also helps support music purchases, instrumentalists that we may use. We have a violinist, a cellist, and a harpist this year, so yeah. Wow. That'll be really fun, and we really appreciate all the support that everybody puts into it.
All right, we'll break a leg.
Thank you.
Speaking with Park City Singers musical director Joe Demers, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Getting into a little bit of local news now, Utah's outdoor recreation economy grew nearly 18% last year, according to recently released federal data. KPCW's Christine Weller reports winter sports and bicycling fueled that growth.
The U.S. Department of Commerce's Bureau of Economic Analysis recently released data for 2023. The data show outdoor recreation has a significant impact on Utah's economy, contributing $9.5 billion to the economy in 2023. That's compared to $8.1 billion in 2022. Outdoor recreation now contributes 3.4% of Utah's GDP and supports nearly 72,000 jobs. Utah Division of Outdoor Recreation, Trails and Planning Director Carly Lanch says winter sports and bicycling fueled much of the growth.
We were third nationally for winter sports with $643 million of value added. And we're seeing a lot of the investment that the state is making in trails and cycling infrastructure. And we think that that's fueled the 43% growth in the bicycling sector, contributing to over $73 million.
Winter sports has been the largest contributor to the outdoor recreation economy in Utah for decades, as skiing, snowboarding, snowmobiling, and snowshoeing are key economic drivers in many communities. However, bicycling saw record growth in 2022. Utah has also improved access to boating, fishing, and RVing, adding a combined $1.55 billion to the economy. Lanch says the COVID-19 pandemic fueled an increase in outdoor recreation, and that trend has continued.
our buildings were kind of emptied out and our trailheads were packed with people. Everyone kind of flocked outside to reap some of the benefits of what we have. And the momentum hasn't really slowed down. People who embrace the outdoors during the pandemic continue to participate.
The division continued to work to expand recreation access this year, particularly in trail maintenance, which includes realignment, winter preparations, and bridge building. This year, Lange says four regional trail crews worked on 126 trail projects.
When we're talking about building new trails or expanding our recreation infrastructure, we hear so often from our land managers and other partners, we can't do that because we can't maintain what we have. Our team stepping in and helping with that maintenance and that backlog is just going to help us continue to expand our recreation offerings.
Those who want to learn more about outdoor recreation in Utah can attend the 2025 Trails Conference in April in Kanab or visit the division's webpage. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone with me from the North Summit School District is Superintendent and Football Coach Jerry Holmes. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So you do double duty as super and football coach. I wanted to touch on the 2024 season. Y'all made it to state semifinals this year. What did you sort of think of the team's performance this time around?
Well, we had a great season. We going into those semifinals, we were 11-0, and that's probably it makes it even more heartbreaking that that's where our season ended. But we did. We had a great season and proud of our kids. And we have some really good seniors that we're going to have to say goodbye to. And you always hate to do that, but feel good about what we did. We just were sad about how it ended.
It's always tough. I mean, how many returning players are you going to have? I think only 300 total students at the high school. So how big is the team?
Well, so I think it's got to be one of the first times in our school's history. Every offensive and defensive starter for us this year was a senior. So we're going to be counting on a lot of young players to step up next year and fill all those positions. So it's they're up for it. But it's hard to lose that many seniors.
Well, the nice thing is you get more seniors each year. So good luck to you next year. I also want to touch on, in your role as superintendent, I'm sure you've been monitoring the bond issue. You know, with the high school there, I know the board definitely believes that a new high school is needed for the North Summit School District. For some of our listeners, maybe elsewhere in the Wasatch back, can you fill them in on the situation in North Summit and why the board thinks the high school must be replaced?
You were breaking up. I didn't hear the complete question. I'm sorry.
Oh, just for listeners that are unaware of the high school situation, why does the board believe it must be replaced?
Well, we had it assessed. We brought in a professional team to do an assessment on our building, and it's coming on 48 years old, and just a lot of mechanical, structural issues that we're concerned about. It has a very heavy roof on it back in the 70s. It met the specs, and that was in the days of putting the big, heavy concrete double T's as the roof system. And just to give you an idea, if we were to build that same building today, new specs would require that roof system to be 2.5 times lighter than our current one. And it's when they had the earthquake down in the valley, the state started doing some evaluations of buildings, and what they were looking for was whether the masonry was reinforced, and our building does not have reinforced masonry, so we're not trying to hit any panic button, but it's a concern to have a heavy roof system like that with unreinforced masonry, along with the fact that we're at a point now where we're having to put money into that building, and it's just lost its efficiency. So it's not growth. It's not because we think we just want one. We're to a point where we do need a new high school.
Yeah, and of course it is a very expensive thing to replace. The board put a $114 million bond on the ballot. Unfortunately, 56% of voters saying no. I mean, I think understandably, because it would have been went directly to their property tax bills. So where does that leave you? I know that you have another option, which is bonding, but without a need of a vote. Is that, how are you communicating your options going forward to your constituents?
Well, you're right with those numbers, and you know, that's what the process is for, and it was 56-44 in percentages, and so I can't speak for the board, and we haven't there hasn't been a vote taken on what we're going to do. In fact, our board meeting right after the election results, they did discuss options, and they know that we have three options to just let it go and not worry about it, which isn't a very good option. But then it's, do we bring it back next November, or do we pursue a lease revenue bond? And it was decided that each board member should take a couple of months to talk to their constituents and think about it, and then have a less emotional conversation about it in our January meeting. Last night, in our board meeting, we did we had an attorney from Zions Bank come to the board to explain what a local building authority is, and if you do a lease revenue bond, you have to have one of those, and there's a process for that. But it was moved from an action item to an information item.
Yeah.
Because a couple of our board members couldn't be here, and we wanted to have a supermajority. And local building authority, that's not just for a big project like this one. A lot of districts have a local building authority, and it for maybe a $10 million addition or whatever that might be. But it's quite a process. It requires three hearings, and also if the board did vote that way, after the three hearings, then the people still have 30 days to sign a petition, and if 20% of those of our total registered voters sign a petition, then even a lease revenue bond wouldn't work for us. So
okay, there is still veto power then.
What's that?
Yeah, so there is still veto power. I want to quickly jump in here and ask about that third option. I mean, if you did nothing, is it possible to just raise money from new growth?
Well, right now we are reaching capacity of that building, and we have our original high school building, and then just across the street we use what we now call the West Wing, but it was our old middle school. We don't have any classrooms that aren't being used, and so we don't really have.
All right, Jerry. I think I'm sorry to cut you off, but we gotta go. NPR News is coming on next, so I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much.